Presenting for Antares is President and CEO, Dr. Paul Woolton. He's been with the company since 2008. So Paul will provide some brief comments on the business, and then we'll move directly into Q&A. Paul?
Okay, thanks very much, and I'd like to thank Deutsche Bank for inviting us for another year here to the healthcare conference, and it's a pleasure to be here in Boston. And this has been a pivotal year so far for Antares. Anyone who follows the company knows, we just launched Atrexup about 12 weeks ago, and it's going well into the rheumatology segment, and Leo are now selling that into the dermatology segment. And last week we announced, actually this week we announced the results of a meeting last week we had with the FDA, which was very positive on our testosterone quick shot program. So we're here at Antares building a company which I think is quite unique. It's a company that uses our history and background in developing auto-injector technology and now marrying that with drugs where we can make a clinical difference to a drug product to enable a patient to self-inject in a domestic environment. And Atrexup is one example of that. The other thing I think which is key is that all of the products we choose to develop at Antares have to have a clinical rationale as to why we're doing this, because it's not just enough to have better compliance or convenience in a product. You have to have some form of clinical edge, which is what we look for in all of our development programs. As we're building our company, we are also seeking to expand our pipeline, and we will be adding additional pipeline projects to the company this year. We're completing the market research on a number of those right now, and I think that you'll see our pipeline expand in the not-too-distant future. And I think that where we are at as a company today puts us in a good place in order to grow this company aggressively going forward as we start to add to our pipeline, as well as to potentially add to the products we have in our sales bag, so to speak, by going through selective acquisition opportunities. So with that, I should hand it back to Greg to start the Q&A from the Deutsche Bank perspective.
Thanks, Paul. If anyone in the audience has any questions, please feel free to raise your hand, and we'll bring a microphone over to you. Why don't we start off with Atrexup? I know it's still early days, but how are you describing just the progress and trajectory of the launch so far?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the launch of Atrexup has actually been a good launch, and we've now seen the impact of Leo starting to kick in. We launched this product in earnest in February, and we're now 12 weeks into the launch, and we are building the prescription base as we speak. The key thing here is actually being able to develop repeat prescriptions for this product, and we're starting to see repeat prescriptions coming into the launch phase. And I've actually been out in the field with rheumatologists myself and talked to a number of them about their experiences with Atrexup. I can tell you that the feedback we've had from the field, both with my visits and also with other people's visits within the organization, is very, very positive. The patients love the device. It's very easy for them to use, and we have had nothing but good reports coming back. There were even reports on WebMD actually giving us a 5-star rating on the ease of use of the product, which is nice to have, but the bottom line is that we're building sales, and I think with our partner, Leo, we're going to be very successful.
How are you finding that it's being prescribed so far, mainly for new patients, for patients switch from orals, and what sort of activity are you seeing?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because the product itself fits into what we call the middle, bridging the gap between oral methotrexate and the biologicals. The types of patients that really lend themselves to this type of product now are patients who are on oral therapy but who are either intolerant to it because they develop side effects to the drug, particularly at the higher doses, or patients who have an inadequate response to oral methotrexate. One of the advantages of going through the subcutaneous route of administration is that you get better blood levels of methotrexate compared to oral administration. And we're actually seeing quite significantly, quite big differences in blood levels. The higher levels of methotrexate, for example, 20 milligrams or 25, you're seeing somewhere between 35 and 45% increase in bioavailability. And that translates ultimately to better systemic levels and better efficacy. So that's the value proposition we have. We're also seeing patients transfer from using a vial, needle, and syringe, for example, into a Trexup. Part of the reason for that is a lot of the patients who use vial, needle, and syringe today, they're either getting the drug given at the doctor's office, or if they are trying to do it at home, it's not easy for RA patients to be able to dose accurately. A lot of them have difficulties handling things like syringes and needles. And then there's the added challenge of being able to give yourself a precise dose from a pre-filled syringe that isn't delineated in terms of milligrams of dose, but rather in milliliters of fluid you're drawing up, which is harder for patients to do. So I think what a Trexup does is enable physicians to know that their patients are being given a precise dose of methotrexate every single week they use the product. And it's also been designed to be very easy for an RA patient to be able to use. It's a simple three-step process. The injection itself actually only takes half a second to give. We tell patients in the instructions for use to use the product for 3 seconds when it's pushed down on the skin. And all of the feedback we've had from the clinic is that includes comments such as it's painless to use. Patients find it very easy to use, and I think the feedback we've got has been very positive, not just for Trexup, but also for the other pipeline projects we're developing too.
Given the limitations for oral methotrexate, the plateau effect over doses over 15 milligrams, are you seeing that translate into the way that your product is being prescribed? Is it weighted toward those higher doses?
Yeah, definitely. The prescription data we've had so far, it's still early days. We are seeing, we have 10, 15, 20, and 25 milligram strengths on the market, but there's very much a weighting towards the 20 milligram dose for Trexup, and that's actually what we expected. The second highest dose being the 15 milligram. The third one, I think, in terms of scripts, from the 25 and then the 10. I do anticipate that the 10 milligram product will find more utility in the dermatology segment than it does in RA.
Is there a way to think about sort of the percent or the portion of RA patients that could benefit from methotrexate over 15 mgs?
What I can tell you today is about 400,000 prescriptions each year issued for injectable methotrexate, compared to about 6 to 7 million prescriptions for methotrexate in total. So the use of methotrexate injectable today is about 5 or 6% of the total prescriptions. Our market research has indicated that we could probably shift that longer term to about somewhere between 12 and 15% and possibly higher. With the Trexup, now that there's a safe and convenient way for patients to self-administer methotrexate parenterally at home.
And then on the safety side, are there aspects of the profile of the Trexup that versus oral methotrexate that you're finding resonate with prescribers?
Yeah, I think prescribers recognize, first of all, every rheumatologist that we've come across since we've been out on the road appreciates the significance of the increased bioavailability of methotrexate that you get with a Trexup, particularly at doses of 15 milligrams and higher. And secondly, I think that there are data out there which show that the tolerance of subcutaneous methotrexate, particularly in terms of things like gastrointestinal side effects, is much better than you get with oral methotrexate. So there's definitely an advantage to being able to switch through that way.
And then on managed care, you've mentioned that managed care recognizes the value proposition. Can you just expand on that and maybe talk about, you know, how your discussions went in terms of gaining coverage and how you convinced plans to pay for the drug?
Yeah, so there's a lot of data that comes out of particularly international markets which show that when you use methotrexate parenterally, like a Trexup, you are able to extend the period of time that patients spend on methotrexate prior to requiring treatment with a biological, for example. And there's a lot of clinical expertise out in Europe in particular, but also up in Canada, where patients have been able to see the utility of methotrexate being extended. And in the UK, for example, there are publications which show that if every patient who is prescribed a TNF-alpha product in the UK were to be given an additional 6 months of methotrexate treatment by switching to parenteral methotrexate, it probably saved the National Health Service in the UK alone about £5,000 per patient, which adds up to a significant sum of money ultimately. So I think the information is quite well known that being able to make methotrexate more useful does ultimately provide better healthcare for patients. There's also another element to this which is important in considering the biologicals as well, because the biologicals themselves are very good drugs. A lot of those are co-prescribed with methotrexate, and I've actually been in a doctor's office when a patient has received 15 milligrams, in this case, dose of Atrexup to go alongside the Enbrel that they were using. So we're already starting to see some physicians recognize the value of using Atrexup to extend the utility to a co-prescription with a biological. And there was a good publication this year where I think it was Abbott had shown that a co-prescription of 20 milligrams of methotrexate with Enbrel actually left the TNF-alpha open towards a more useful length of life, because in some of these patients you develop antibodies to the TNF-alpha product itself, and the methotrexate helps modulate that. So I think there's a lot of utility for methotrexate. We're really reinventing it in this country, and that's essentially what we're going through right now, is a reinvention and a better appreciation of the utility of methotrexate as a treatment.
Any questions out there in the audience? Over here.
How does your current sales force look right now? Do you think you have the right size? Any plans to continue expanding that? Any overview on that?
That's a good question. So we've implemented internally within the company, we have a strategic marketing department, and all our sales heads are based in there as well. We have a sales force which is currently under contract to Quintiles of 25 representatives. We're targeting 2,000 to 2,500 physicians, but those reps are able to target all of the physicians we need to hit, certainly the high prescribers of methotrexate in this country. We've supplemented that also with 6 MSLs, medical science liaisons, who also visit with doctors and talk to them about the benefits of the methotrexate. We have 3 district managers on top of that. Plus we have 6 national account managers who work for us as well. So in total, there's about 40 people responsible for the commercial effort of Atrexup out there in the field one way or another, supplemented by a group of about 10 people we have in-house. The way we see the prescription trends moving right now, we're anticipating bringing sales reps in-house within the next 3 to 6 months. So they will become Antares representatives and working for the company directly. I would say, though, that I think that the people we've had working with us right now for Quintiles have done a fantastic job, and we hope that ultimately they'll all be able to join us at Antares. The other thing is that we've had a very good Salesforce coverage from Leo. So Leo are targeting about 7,000 dermatologists in the U.S. They have a significant advantage, actually, which is they already have a database of 50,000 psoriasis patients which can be accessed as a result of some of the other psoriasis treatments they sell. And they have 85 reps in total going out, and that's more than enough for them to cover the derm space. And I was at a meeting with Leo a couple of weeks ago, and I think they're really pleased with the way they're starting to pan out. The organization, for those of you that aren't familiar with Leo, it's a Danish-based company, but they have an organization over here in the U.S. Primarily focused on psoriasis as a market. Sales levels probably in about $500 million range, and they're a significant dermatology player. So when we went with Leo as a partner, it really was all about finding a great partner for Antares to work with. They know the space. One of the benefits that came out as a result of our labeling discussions with the agency was a statement in the dosing section that said that the use of Atrexup could be encouraged in patients who can then go back to using conventional treatment with agents like Taclonex, which is one of the LEO products. So for LEO, I think this is very much a strategic weapon for them in terms of their whole portfolio. So they're very committed to it. And right now, I can tell you, I think they're doing a great job.
Are the LEO reps primarily focused on detailing a truck slip, or do they have other products in the bag?
No, they have other products like Taclonex, for example. They have about three or four products that treat psoriasis. And I think what this is going to enable them to do is to be able to keep patients longer, because a patient without going to a Trexup, for example, might gravitate from a steroid treatment directly onto a TNF-alpha. What this is going to enable LEO to do is to be able to keep that patient on one of their products, which will be a Trexup, particularly in cases of flare, and then be able to send that patient back to one of their other products. There'll be like a shuttling program between their own treatments before eventually a patient will be able to go to a biologic, which means they keep the patient for longer.
How do you think about the size of the psoriasis opportunity versus the RA opportunity?
It's an interesting market. I think the number of patients with psoriasis in this country is much larger than the number of patients with rheumatoid arthritis. The segment we're going after is the severe arthritis category. The definition of that is quite vague. But the number of patients in that category can probably be somewhere up to about 1 million patients in the U.S. The opportunity, I think, is a different one from rheumatology, because the psoriasis market for both the TNF-alphas and, I suspect, methotrexate is still developing. It's in the market development phase, whereas the rheumatology market is more of an established market. And if you look at the dermatology market today, out of a total of about $22 billion worth of drug that's sold, this is the TNF-alpha category, into the market, about $5 billion of that finds its way into the dermatology segment, and about $17 billion finds its way into rheumatology. So clearly, I think there's still a lot of market expansion opportunity in that segment for TNF-alpha. I also believe that alpha is an opportunity to expand the utility of methotrexate and the Trexup in the dermatology office as well.
Any questions out there in the audience? One more on back on managed care. Can you just give us a snapshot of your current coverage, sort of where it stands, covered lives, where you are, tier 2, tier 3, and then your plans on modifying that going forward?
Certainly. Well, we're actually we're making good inroads into the managed care piece. Basically, today where we sit, about 90% of people have some form of coverage for a Trexup. The important component is the preferred status or the prior authorization coverage, which right now is in the sort of 45 to 50% range for patients. We're tier 3 in most plans. We add plans literally week by week. We added about 10 million lives from TRICARE just a couple of weeks ago, which is the Department of Defense. And the other plans that we are still talking to, which have yet to cover a Trexup, most of those have an automatic 6-month waiting time before they put the product into plan. And we are anticipating further coverage is going to come with time. So I think probably by August, September, we'll see quite a significant increase in the number of covered lives at the preferred access level for the product. It's just a matter of time, really.
Okay. I think I'll move on to testosterone products, unless anyone has any more questions on Trexup. So maybe if you just give us a snapshot of the current status of your testosterone product, and perhaps there have been a lot of changes in that marketplace, certainly in terms of growth and perceived safety issues. A lot of scientific studies have come out that have affected that market. There's a lot of legal stuff going on now. Just what are your thoughts on the events that have happened that have affected that market, and what the implications could be for your program?
Yeah, that's a good question. And in actual fact, I believe we have the right product at the right place at the right time for this market. The data that was published, which was, I think you're only referring to that cardiovascular study in men over 65 who had a previous history of cardiovascular disease, was published, I think, in October or November last year. I believe the authors have been asked to amend that publication at least twice. And what didn't make the news was a letter to the editor of the journal, I think it was JAMA, by 25 key opinion leaders actually critiquing the article and suggesting it should be retracted. But there's also the other side of the debate, which is how good testosterone is for men when they've been able to use it. And, you know, there are a lot of benefits in terms of both cardiovascular benefits as well as things like metabolic benefits, which lead to leaner body mass. Some of that might be preventative for things like diabetes. And on top of that, we've also got the debate over the use of the gels, for example, which, you know, they're part of this legal. Every time I turn on the TV and watch the Golf Channel, there's usually some lawyer trying to find a customer, and they particularly aim those at gel customers, actually. But the gel issue is one of transference. The patients who use the gel every day shouldn't come into contact with their significant others or their children, and we've even heard reports of people's pets developing untoward side effects as a result of coming into contact with testosterone. But the gel transference issue is a significant issue. The alternatives to gels, which represent about $2.5 billion worth of sales in this country, is to use injectable. And in fact, the injectable side of this business has grown significantly from about 500,000 prescriptions about 5 years ago to just over 3, I think, now. They represent about 35 to 45% of the prescriptions today. The prescription growth with the gels has declined a little bit in the last 6 months. That decline hasn't been seen to the same extent with the injectables. And the injectable challenge is that the current product is designed for intramuscular use. It's given through a 19-gauge needle, which is quite a large needle, and has to be given under medical supervision because it's a deep intramuscular injection. And it's given every 2 or every 4 weeks. The challenge with the intramuscular shot is you get very high blood levels of testosterone as a result. So the product we have designed, and I'll talk about the blood levels in a second, the ideal product profile here is one which gives you the blood levels that you get with a gel without the transference issues. So a subcutaneous injectable, which enables one to give an injection at home, that gives you the correct blood levels, but without transference is the gap in the market that we're going to go after. And with the phase 2 data we received in the first quarter of this year, you know, the therapeutic window for testosterone is somewhere between 300 and 1,100 nanograms per deciliter. If you have excursions above 1,100, then that's something that you try and avoid. And we did two doses, which was a 50 milligram dose subcutaneously and a 100 milligram dose subcutaneously given every week over a six-week period. And what we found was at steady state in the weeks 5 and 6 with that injectable, and this is data you can see on our website, we were able to keep the average concentration within the range of the 300 to the 1100, with the 100 milligram dose being at the upper end of that range, and the lower dose being just above the lower end of that range. So what that suggests to us is that we probably need to develop three doses, which will include a 75 milligram dose in the middle. And last week we had a meeting with the agency, which was a very productive meeting for Antares. We had a really good dialogue with the agency. We've agreed a path forward with the FDA on developing this product. And it's going to be a very efficient phase 3 study that we have to conduct. And I think that what I'm pleased about is, first of all, the quality of the discussion we have with the FDA was very, very helpful. The path forward they've given us to develop the product is very, very clear. This time next year, we will come out of the clinic with clinical data. It's basically a pharmacokinetic endpoint we're looking for. And there are a couple of other things we're adding into the study to enable us to add value to the label. And the FDA were also very helpful with us in terms of laying out all of the CMC section required for this product, which we were really delighted with. So we've had a great meeting with the agency. We've got a very clear path forward. The agency are requiring us to do studies in 150 patients. We'd actually initially gone in there with a higher number in mind, but we were pleased to come out with a program that will need 150 patients to complete. And our initial dosing regimen will be a 75 milligram dose. We'll take a break in the end of a six-week period, look at the dose levels in patients in respect to their blood level, and then we'll either titrate up or titrate down, which is what happens in practice in the clinic for testosterone. So we'll be able to offer, I think, a very comprehensive product range, and one which will enable us to compete with the gels in terms of giving the blood levels, but also being able to avoid the transience issue of the gels and get the benefits of a subcutaneous injection, which won't include the types of excursions you see with the intramuscular shot, which right now, in the study we conducted, had blood levels in excess of 2,000 nanograms per deciliter on a once every other week administration.
So one phase three study, you got data, top line data next May?
Yeah.
And then filing?
We'll be working on all of the CMC. We're looking to file this product right at the back end of 2015, early 2016. So this product will actually be on the market, if everything goes to plan, within 3 years of where we're sitting today. And part of the length of time of that study is going to be, of course, the recruitment and the enrollment, but traditionally testosterone studies have been very fast to enroll, so we'll keep our fingers crossed that we can keep this on track with rapid enrollment.
Do you think that the concerns about transference, is that been a driver of growth for the injectable market?
I think it's part of the drive for growth, yeah. And certainly we confirmed last week that we won't expect to see any transference issues with our injectable. The injection itself only takes about 4 or 5 seconds to give. It's a once-week injection. The injection is a low-volume injection at half a milliliter, regardless of the strength you're actually giving. And I've actually tested out a placebo of that auto-injector myself, and you don't feel a thing when you give it. So I think it's actually a good product for the market. And I believe that when Antares is at the point of marketing this, in about 3 years' time, as I mentioned, we'll be able to focus on the urology force. We've already had interest from a number of companies on the primary care element of QST. So I am very confident we'll be able to partner this, probably between the phase three study data coming out and gaining approval for the product, which is when you get the best sort of value and the best partner on board.
Okay. Any questions out there?
Take share from the injectable market or potentially even lead into the gel market and you know, to the extent the orals are out there in the future, orals as well?
Yeah, I believe that we will be able to compete with the gels and take market share from the gel segment, certainly. I also believe that because of the amount of injectable use there is out there today, we're also going to be able to take a share of that injectable. And as I mentioned earlier, I don't think the dosing regimen for the current formulation that's in there is ideal because of the peaks and troughs you get for the product. On the oral market, I have a background in drug delivery in sort of academic past, and I remain skeptical about oral delivery of testosterone. I think that it's possible to do. The question is how variable is that absorption. So I think that what we have is a very easy product to give. Certainly in the experience from the Trexup has shown us that using an auto-injector that's quick, efficient, and painless to use is just as attractive to patients as taking a tablet. And I think that with our QST device, we're going to be able to show that patients will like using it.
I'm not sure you can say much about this. I know it's still early days, but the litigation that is going on between your company and Medac, you know, how do we think about the timeline for the litigation, when we could learn more, the potential risks of that, of the litigation to your company and your products?
Well, I think First of all, I'm limited as to what I can say because I was just deposed on Friday, so I have to be very careful with any statement I make. But sufficient to say that I believe that our intellectual property is very strong. We have numerous patents around the Trexup, and we intend to assert all those patent rights in any litigation. And this litigation, by the time it goes to the courts, is going to take some 2 to 3 years to adjudicate unless there's a settlement beforehand. That's typically what happens, but we're prepared to defend our IP. It's important to us. We spent a lot of time and effort on getting patents around the Trexup, not just the device, but also the combination of the drug, plus the device and its behavior in the human body. And, you know, we're armed up to be able to defend that.
Is the timing of patent issuances, you know, when you got yours, when they got theirs issued, is that relevant at all to this?
Well, our patents, first of all, we were one of the originators in the auto-injector market, so some of our patents have a priority date going back to 1999, and a couple of them just got reissued. We have patents which continue to evolve on Trexup. I think we have 7 or 8 patents in the Orange Book now. We have more coming, and the patents around the combination of the Trexup and of methotrexate and the auto-injector device, which is a Trexup, I think the first, what we call a hazardous agents patent, actually issued last June or July in 2013. So I think our patents certainly precede the day that they file their NDA.
Is there, in terms of a settlement, is there a point in the litigation that you, you know, is likely that you would get to before you would consider?
I really can't comment on that. I'd have to shoot you if I did.
And everybody in the room. Any questions out there? I have a couple more on the pipeline. You talked about adding at least, I think, 3 new projects in 2014. How do we think about therapeutic areas, you know, of most interest and where those, what kinds of programs?
That's a good question, because this company is really about developing a pipeline for the long term. That's where the value is going to be. We are acting in the process of identifying new products to add to the pipeline. As I said earlier, the first thing, they have to have a clinical benefit. Second thing is there has to be a market opportunity for the products and a gap in that market for us to fit into. And they must really be justified by the market opportunity first before we go off and develop the technology and the clinical program. We have right now just completed work with a third party, it's a blue chip consultancy on this, identified the first 2 of those 3 that we'll be adding to the pipeline. We'll be adding them to the pipeline following the next board meeting, assuming we get approval to move ahead with those, which I'm sure we will. And we also have a couple of others which we're working on to add a third product to that pipeline. So by the end of the year, we'll have at least 3 and possibly 1 or 2 other partner programs in place as well. So it's very active at the company right now.
I think with that, we'll wrap it up. I'd like to thank Paul for being here.
Thank you.